Disc 4.
Chapter 14. The Secret Way at Last. The four children crept downstairs through the dark and silent night. Nobody made a sound at all. They made their way to the study. George softly closed the door and then switched on the light. The children stared at the eight panels over the mantelpiece. Yes, there were exactly eight, four in one row and four in the row above. Julian spread the linen roll out on the table and the children pored over it.
"The cross is in the middle of the second panel in the top row," said Julian in a low voice. "I'll try pressing it. Watch, all of you."
He went to the fireplace. The others followed him, their hearts beating fast with excitement. Julian stood on tiptoe and began to press hard in the middle of the second panel. Nothing happened.
"Press harder. Tap it," said Dick. "I daren't make too much noise," said Julian, feeling all over the panel to see if there was any roughness that might tell of a hidden spring or lever.
Suddenly, under his hands, the panel slid silently back, just as the one had done at Kirin Farmhouse in the hall. The children stared at the space behind, thrilled.
"It's not big enough to get into," said George. "It can't be the entrance to the secret way."
Julian got out his torch from his dressing gown pocket. He put it inside the opening and gave a low exclamation.
"There's a sort of handle here, with strong wire or something attached to it. I'll pull it and see what happens."
He pulled, but he was not strong enough to move the handle that seemed to be embedded in the wall. Dick put his hand in, and the two boys then pulled together.
"Oh, it's moving! It's giving way a bit," panted Julian. "Go on, Dick, pull hard."
The handle suddenly came away from the wall, and behind it came thick wire, rusty and old. At the same time, a curious grating noise came from below the hearthrug in front of the fireplace, and Anne almost fell.
"Julian, something is moving under the rug," she said, frightened. "I felt it. Under the rug, quick."
The handle could not be pulled out any farther. The boys let go and looked down. To the right of the fireplace, under the rug, something had moved. There was no doubt of that. The rug sagged down instead of being flat and straight.
"A stone has moved in the floor," said Julian, his voice shaking with excitement. "This handle works a lever which is attached to this wire. Quick, pull up the rug and roll back the carpet."
With trembling hands, the children pulled back the rug and the carpet, and then stood staring at a very strange thing. A big flat stone laid in the floor had slipped downwards, pulled in some manner by the wire attached to the handle hidden behind the panel. There was now a black space where the stone had been.
"Look at that," said George in a thrilling whisper. "The entrance to the secret way."
"It's here after all," said Julian.
"Let's go down," said Dick.
"No,"
said Anne, shivering at the thought of disappearing into the black hole. Julian flashed his torch into the black space. The stone had slid down and then sideways. Below was a space just big enough to take a man bending down.
"I expect there's a passage or something leading from here under the house and out," said Julian. "Golly, I wonder where it leads to."
"We simply must find out," said George.
"Not now," said Dick. "It's dark and cold. I don't fancy going along the secret way at midnight. I don't mind just hopping down to see what it's like, but don't let's go along any passage till tomorrow."
"Uncle Quentin will be working here tomorrow," said Julian.
"He said he was going to sweep the snow away from the front door in the morning," said George. "We could slip into the study then. It's Saturday. There may be no lessons."
"All right," said Julian, who badly wanted to explore everything then and there.
But for goodness sake, let's have a look and see if there is a passage down there. At present, all we can see is a hole.
I'll help you down, said Dick.
So he gave his brother a hand, and the boy dropped lightly down into the black space, holding his torch. He gave a loud exclamation.
It's the entrance to the secret way, all right. There's a passage leading from here under the house, awfully low and narrow. But I can see it's a passage. I do wonder where it leads to.
He shivered. It was cold and damp down there.
Give me a hand up, Dick, he said.
He was soon out of the hole and in the warm study again. The children looked at one another in the greatest joy and excitement. This was an adventure, a real adventure. It was a pity they couldn't go on with it now.
We'll try and take Timmy with us tomorrow, said George. Oh, I say, how are we going to shut the entrance up?
We can't leave the rug and carpet sagging over that hole, said Dick, nor can we leave the panel open.
We'll see if we can get the stone back, said Julian.
He stood on tiptoe and felt about inside the panel. His hand closed on a kind of knob set deep in a stone. He pulled it, and at once the handle slid back, pulled by the wire. At the same time, the sunk stone glided to the surface of the floor again, making a slight grating sound as it did so.
"Well, it's like magic," said Dick. "It really is. Fancy the mechanism working so smoothly after years of not being used. This is the most exciting thing I've ever seen."
There was a noise in the bedroom above. The children stood still and listened.
"It's Mr. Rowland," whispered Dick. "He's heard us. Quick, slip upstairs before he comes down."
They switched out the light and opened the study door softly. Up the stairs they fled, as quietly as church mice, their hearts thumping so loudly that it seemed as if everyone in the house must hear the beat. The girls got safely to their rooms, and Dick was able to slip into his. But Julian was seen by Mr. Rowland as he came out of his room with a torch.
"What are you doing, Julian?" asked the tutor in surprise. "Did you hear a noise downstairs? I thought I did."
"Yes, I heard quite a lot of noise downstairs," said Julian truthfully. "But perhaps it's snow falling off the roof, landing with a plop in the ground, sir. Do you think that's it?"
"I don't know," said the tutor doubtfully. "We'll go down and see."
They went down, but of course there was nothing to be seen. Julian was glad they had been able to shut the panel and make the stone come back to its proper place again. Mr. Rowland was the very last person he wanted to tell his secret to. They went upstairs, and Julian slipped into his room.
"Is it all right?"
whispered Dick.
"Yes," said Julian. "Don't let's talk. Mr. Rowland's awake, and I don't want him to suspect anything."
The boys fell asleep. When they awoke in the morning, there was a completely white world outside. Snow covered everything, and covered it deeply. Timothy's kennel could not be seen, but there were footmarks round about it. George gave a squeal when she saw how deep the snow was.
"Oh, poor Timothy! I'm going to get him in. I don't care what anyone says. I won't let him be buried in the snow."
She dressed and tore downstairs. She went out to the kennel, floundering knee-deep in the snow, but there was no Timmy there. A loud bark from the kitchen made her jump. Joanna the cook knocked on the kitchen window.
"It's all right. I couldn't bear the dog out there in the snow, so I fetched him in, poor thing. Your mother says I can have him in the kitchen, but you're not to come and see him."
"Oh, good. Timmy's in the warmth," said George gladly. She yelled to Joanna, "Thanks awfully. You are kind."
She went indoors and told the others. They were very glad.
"And I've got a bit of you," said Dick. "Mr. Rowland is in bed with a bad cold, so there are to be no lessons today. Cheers!"
"Golly, that is good news," said George, cheering up tremendously. "Timmy in the warm kitchen, and Mr. Rowland kept in bed. I do feel pleased."
"We shall be able to explore the secret way safely now," said Julian.
Aunt Fanny is going to do something in the kitchen this morning with Joanna, and Uncle is going to tackle the snow. I vote we say we'll do lessons by ourselves in the sitting room, and then, when everything is safe, we'll explore the secret way.
But why must we do lessons? Asked George in dismay.
Because if we don't, silly, we'll have to help your father dig away the snow, said Julian. So, to his uncle's surprise, Julian suggested that the four children should do lessons by themselves in the sitting room.
Well, I thought you'd like to come and help dig away the snow, said Uncle Quentin, but perhaps you had better get on with your work.
The children sat themselves down, as good as gold, in the sitting room, their books before them. They heard Mr. Rowland coughing in his room. They heard their aunt go into the kitchen and talk to Joanna. They heard Timmy scratching at the kitchen door, then paws pattering down the passage. Then a big, inquiring nose came round the door, and there was old Timmy, looking anxiously for his beloved mistress.
Timmy!
Squealed George, and ran to him. She flung her arms round his neck and hugged him.
You act as if you hadn't seen Tim for a year, said Julian.
It seems like a year, said George. I say, there's my father digging away like mad. Can't we go to the study now? We ought to be safe for a good while.
They left the sitting room and went to the study. Julian was soon pulling the handle behind the secret panel. George had already turned back the rug and the carpet. The stone slid downward and sideways. The secret way was open.
Come on, said Julian. Hurry.
He jumped down into the hole. Dick followed, then Anne, then George. Julian pushed them all into the narrow, low passage. Then he looked up. Perhaps he had better pull the carpet and rug over the hole, in case anyone came into the room and looked around. It took him a few seconds to do it. Then he bent down and joined the others in the passage. They were going to explore the secret way at last.
Chapter 15. An exciting journey and hunt. Timothy had leapt down into the hole when George had jumped. He now ran ahead of the children, puzzled at their wanting to explore such a cold, dark place. Both Julian and Dick had torches, which threw broad beams before them. There was not much to be seen. The secret way under the old house was narrow and low, so that the children were forced to go in single file and to stoop almost double. It was a great relief to them when the passage became a little wider and the room a little higher. It was very tiring to stoop all the time.
"Have you any idea where the secret way is going?" Dick asked Julian. "I mean, is it going towards the sea or away from it?"
"Oh, not towards the sea," said Julian, who had a very good sense of direction. "As far as I can make out, the passage is going towards the common. Look at the walls. They are rather sandy in places, and we know that the common has sandy soil. I hope we shan't find that the passage has fallen in anywhere."
They went on and on. The secret way was very straight, though occasionally it would round a rocky part in a curve.
"Isn't it dark and cold?" said Anne, shivering. "I wish I'd put on a coat. How many miles have we come, Julian?"
"Not even one, silly," said Julian. "Hullo! Look here. The passage has fallen in a bit there."
Two bright torches shone in front of them, and the children saw that the sandy roof had fallen in. Julian kicked at the pile of sandy soil with his foot.
"It's all right," he said. "We can force our way through easily. It isn't much of a fall, and it's mostly sand. I'll do a bit of kicking."
After some trampling and kicking, the roof fall no longer blocked the way. There was now enough room for the children to climb over it, bending their heads low to avoid knocking them against the top of the passage. Julian shone his torch forward and saw that the way was clear.
"The secret way is very wide just here," he said suddenly, and flashed his torch around to show the others.
"It's been widened out to make a sort of little room," said George. "Look, there's a kind of bench at the back made out of the rug. I believe it's a resting place.
George was right. It was very tiring to creep along the narrow passage for so long. The little wide place, with its rocky bench, made a very good resting place. The four tired children, cold but excited, huddled together on the funny seat and took a welcome rest. Timmy put his head on George's knee. He was delighted to be with her again.
"Well, come on," said Julian after a few minutes. "I'm getting awfully cold. I do wonder where this passage comes out."
"Julian, do you think it could come out at Kirin Farmhouse?" asked George suddenly. "You know what Mrs. Sanders said, that there was a secret passage leading from the farmhouse somewhere? Well, this may be the one, and it leads to Kirin Cottage."
"George, I believe you're right," said Julian. "Yes, the two houses belonged to your family years ago, and in the old days there were often secret passages joining houses, so it's quite plain this secret way joins them up together. Why didn't I think of that before?"
"I say!" squealed Anne, in a high, excited voice. "I say! I've thought of something, too!"
"What?" asked everyone.
"Well, if those two artists have got Uncle's papers, we may be able to get them away before the men can send them off by post or take them away themselves,"
squeaked Anne, so thrilled with her idea that she could hardly get the words out quickly enough.
"They're prisoners at the farmhouse because of the snow, just as we were at the cottage."
"Anne, you're right," said Julian.
"Clever girl," said Dick.
"I say, if we could get those papers again, how wonderful it would be," said George.
Timmy joined in the general excitement and jumped up and down in joy. Something had pleased the children, so he was pleased too.
"Come on," said Julian, taking Anne's hand. "This is thrilling. If George is right, and this secret way comes out at Kirin Farmhouse somewhere, we'll somehow hunt through those men's rooms and find the papers."
"You said that searching people's rooms was a shocking thing to do," said George.
"Well, I didn't know then all I know now," said Julian. "We're doing this for your father, and maybe for our country too, if his secret formula is valuable. We've got to set our wits to work now to outwit dangerous enemies."
"Do you really think they are dangerous?" asked Anne, rather afraid.
"Yes, I should think so," said Julian. "But you needn't worry, Anne. You've got me and Dick and Tim to protect you."
"I can protect her too," said George indignantly. "You're fiercer than any boy I know," said Dick.
"Come on," said Julian impatiently. "I'm longing to get to the end of this passage."
They all went on again, Anne following behind Julian and Dick behind George. Timmy ran up and down the line, squeezing by them whenever he wanted to. He thought it was a very peculiar way to spend a morning. Julian stopped suddenly after they had gone a good way.
"What's up?" asked Dick from the back. "Not another roof fall, I hope?"
"No, but I think we've come to the end of the passage," said Julian, thrilled.
The others crowded as close to him as they could. The passage certainly had come to an end. There was a rocky wall in front of them, and set firmly in it were iron staples intended for footholds. These went up the wall, and when Julian turned his torch upwards, the children saw there was a square opening in the roof of the passage.
"We have to climb up this rocky wall now," said Julian. "Go through that dark hole there. Keep on climbing, and goodness knows where we'll come out. I'll go first. You wait here, everyone, and I'll come back and tell you what I've seen."
The boy put his torch between his teeth and then pulled himself up by the iron staples set in the wall. He set his feet on them and then climbed up through the square, dark hole, feeling for the staples as he went. He went up for a good way. It was almost like going up a chimney shaft, he thought. It was cold and smelt musty. Suddenly, he came to a ledge and he stepped onto it. He took his torch from his teeth and flashed it around him. There was a stone wall behind him, at the side of him, and stone above him. The black hole up which he had come yawned by his feet. Julian shone his torch in front of him, and a shock of surprise went through him. There was no stone wall in front of him, but a big wooden door made of black oak. A handle was set about waist high. Julian turned it with trembling fingers. What was he going to see? The door opened outwards over the ledge, and it was difficult to get round it without falling back into the hole. Julian managed to open it wide, squeezed round it without losing his footing, and stepped beyond it, expecting to find himself in a room. But his hand felt more wood in front of him. He shone his torch round and found that he was up against what looked like yet another door. Under his searching fingers, it suddenly moved sideways and slid silently away. And then Julian knew where he was. "I'm in the cupboard at Kirin Farmhouse, the one that has a false back," he thought. "The secret way comes up behind it. How clever! Little did we know, when we played about in this cupboard, that not only did it have a sliding back, but that it was the entrance to the secret way hidden behind it." The cupboard was now full of clothes belonging to the artists. Julian stood and listened. There was no sound of anyone in the room. Should he just take a quick look round and see if those lost papers were anywhere about? Then he remembered the other four, waiting patiently below in the cold. He had better go and tell them what had happened. They could all come and help in the search. He stepped into the space behind the sliding back. The sliding door slipped across again, and Julian was left standing on the narrow ledge, with the old oak door wide open to one side of him. He did not bother to shut it. He felt about his feet and found the iron staples in the hole below him. Down he went, clinging with his hands and feet, his torch in his teeth again.
"Julian, what a time you've been! Quick, tell us all about it," cried George.
"It's most terribly thrilling," said Julian. "Absolutely super! Where do you suppose all this leads to?"
"Into the cupboard at Kirin Farmhouse, the one that's got a false back."
"Golly," said Dick.
"I say," said George.
"Did you go into the room?"
cried Anne.
"I climbed as far as I could and came to a big oak door," said Julian. "It has a handle this side, so I swung it wide open. Then I saw another wooden door in front of me. At least, I thought it was a door. I didn't know it was just the false back of that cupboard. It was quite easy to slide back, and I stepped through and found myself among a whole lot of clothes hanging in the cupboard. Then I hurried back to tell you."
"Julian, we can hunt for those papers now," said George eagerly. "Was there anyone in the room?"
"I couldn't hear anyone," said Julian. "Now, what I propose is this. We'll all go up and have a hunt round those two rooms. The men have the room next to the cupboard one, too."
"Oh, good," said Dick, thrilled at the thought of such an adventure. "Let's go now. You go first, Ju, then Anne, then George, and then me."
"What about Tim?" asked George.
"Well, he can't climb, silly," said Julian. "He's a simply marvellous dog, but he certainly can't climb, George. We'll have to leave him down here."
"He won't like that," said George.
"Well, we can't carry him up," said Dick. "You won't mind staying here for a bit, will you, Tim, old fellow?"
Tim wagged his tail, but as he saw the four children mysteriously disappearing up the wall, he put his big tail down at once.
"What? Going without him?
How could they?"
He jumped up at the wall and fell back. He jumped again and whined.
George called down in a low voice,
"Be quiet, Tim, dear. We shan't be long."
Tim stopped whining. He lay down at the bottom of the wall, his ears well cocked. This adventure was becoming more and more peculiar. Soon the children were on the narrow ledge. The old oak door was still wide open. Julian shone his torch, and the others saw the false back of the cupboard. Julian put his hands on it, and it slid silently sideways. Then the torch shone on coats and dressing gowns. The children stood quite still, listening. There was no sound from the room.
"I'll open the cupboard door and peep into the room," whispered Julian. "Don't make a sound."
The boy pushed between the clothes and felt for the outer cupboard door with his hand. He found it and pushed it slightly. It opened a little, and a shaft of daylight came into the cupboard. He peeped cautiously into the room. There was no one there at all. That was good.
"Come on," he whispered to the others. "The room's empty."
One by one, the children crept out of the clothes cupboard and into the room. There was a big bed there, a washstand, chest of drawers, small table and two chairs. Nothing else. It would be easy to search the whole room.
"Look, Julian, there's a door between the two rooms," said George suddenly. "Two of us can go and hunt there, and two here, and we can lock the doors that lead onto the landing so that no one can come in and catch us."
"Good idea," said Julian, who was afraid that at any moment someone might come in and catch them in their search.
"Anne and I will go into the next room, and you and Dick can search this one. Lock the door that opens onto the landing, Dick, and I'll lock the one in the other room. We'll leave the connecting door open so that we can whisper to one another."
Quietly, the boy and girl slipped through the connecting door into the second room, which was very like the first. That was empty too. Julian went over to the door that led to the landing and turned the key in the lock. He heard Dick doing the same to the door in the other room. He heaved a big sigh. Now he felt safe.
"Anne, turn up the rugs and see if any papers are hidden there," he said. "Then look under the chair cushions and strip the bed to see if anything is hidden under the mattress."
Anne set to work, and Julian began to hunt too. He started on the chest of drawers, which he thought would be a very likely place to hide things in. The children's hands were shaking as they felt here and there for the lost papers. It was so terribly exciting. They wondered where the two men were. Down in the warm kitchen, perhaps. It was cold up here in the bedrooms, and they would not want to be away from the warmth. They could not go out because the snow was piled in great drifts round Kirin farmhouse. Dick and George were searching hard in the other room. They looked in every drawer. They stripped the bed. They turned up rugs and carpet. They even put their hands up the big chimney place.
"Julian, have you found anything?"
asked Dick in a low voice, appearing at the door between the two rooms.
"Not a thing," said Julian rather gloomily. "They've hidden the papers well. I only hope they haven't got them on them, in their pockets or something."
Dick stared at him in dismay. He hadn't thought of that.
"That would be sickening," he said.
"You go back and hunt everywhere, simply everywhere," ordered Julian. "Punch the pillows to see if they've stuck them under the pillowcase."
Dick disappeared. Rather a lot of noise came from his room. It sounded as if he were doing a great deal of punching. Anne and Julian went on hunting too. There was simply nowhere that they did not look. They even turned the pictures round to see if the papers had been stuck behind one of them. But there was nothing to be found. It was bitterly disappointing.
"We can't go without finding them," said Julian in desperation. "It was such a bit of luck to get here like this, down the secret way, right into the bedrooms. We simply must find those papers."
"I say," said Dick, appearing again, "I can hear voices. Listen."
All four children listened. Yes, there were men's voices, just outside the bedroom doors.
Chapter 16. The Children Are Discovered.
"What shall we do?"
whispered George. They had all tiptoed to the first room and were standing together listening.
"'We'd better go down the secret way again,' said Julian.
"'Oh, no, we—'
began George, when she heard the handle of the door being turned. Whoever was trying to get in could not open the door. There was an angry exclamation. And then the children heard Mr. Wilton's voice.
"'My door seems to have stuck. Do you mind if I come through your bedroom and see what's the matter with this handle?'
"'Come right along,' came the voice of Mr. Thomas.
There was the sound of footsteps going to the outer door of the second room. Then there was the noise of a handle being turned and shaken.
"'What's this?' said Mr. Wilton in exasperation. "'This won't open either. Can the doors be locked?'
"'It looks like it,' said Mr. Thomas.
There was a pause. Then the children distinctly heard a few words uttered in a low voice.
"'Are the papers safe? Is anyone after them?'
"'They're in your room, aren't they?' said Mr. Thomas.
There was another pause. The children looked at one another. So, the men had got the papers, and what was more, they were in the room. The very room the children stood in. They looked round it eagerly, racking their brains to think of some place they had not yet explored.
"'Quick, hunt round again while we've time,' whispered Julian. "'Don't make a noise.'
On tiptoe, the children began a thorough hunt once more. How they searched! They even opened the pages of the books on the table, thinking that the papers might have been slipped in there. But they could find nothing.
"'Hi, Mrs. Sanders,' came Mr. Wilton's voice. "'Have you by any chance locked these two doors? We can't get in.'
"'Dear me!' said the voice of Mrs. Sanders from the stairs. "'I'll come along and see. I certainly haven't locked any doors.'
Once again the handles were turned, but the doors would not open. The men began to get very impatient.
"'Do you suppose anyone is in our rooms?' Mr. Wilton asked Mrs. Sanders.
She laughed. "'Well, no. Who would be in your rooms? There's only me and Mr. Sanders in the house, and you know as well as I do that no one can come in from outside, for we're quite snowed up. I don't understand it. The locks of the doors must have slipped.'
Anne was lifting up the washstand jug to look underneath at that moment. It was heavier than she thought, and she had to let it down again suddenly. It struck the marble washstand with a crash, and water slopped out all over the place. Everyone outside the door heard the noise. Mr. Wilton banged on the door and rattled the handle.
"'Who's there? Let us in or you'll be sorry. What are you doing in there?'
"'Idiot, Anne,' said Dick. "'Now they'll break the door down.'
That was exactly what the two men intended to do. Afraid that someone was mysteriously in their room, trying to find the stolen papers, they went quite mad and began to put their shoulders to the door and heave hard. The door shook and creaked.
"'Now you be careful what you're doing!'
cried the indignant voice of Mrs. Sanders. The men took no notice. There came a crash as they both tried out their double strength on the door.
"'Quick! We must go!' said Julian. "'We mustn't let the men know how we got here, or we shan't be able to come and hunt another time. Anne, George, Dick, get back to the cupboard quickly!'
The children raced for the clothes cupboard.
"'I'll go first and help you down,' said Julian.
He got out onto the narrow ledge and found the iron footholds with his feet. Down he went, torch held between his teeth as usual.
"'Anne, come next,' he called. "'And Dick, you come third and give a hand to Anne if she wants it. George is a good climber. She can easily get down herself.
Anne was slow at climbing down. She was terribly excited, rather frightened, and so afraid of falling that she hardly dared to feel for each iron staple as she went down.
"'Buck up, Anne,' whispered Dick above her. "'The men have almost got the door down.'
There were tremendous sounds coming from the bedroom door. At any moment now, it might break down and the men would come racing in. Dick was thankful when he could begin to climb down the wall. Once they were all out, George could shut the big oak door and they would be safe. George was hidden among the clothes in the cupboard, waiting her turn to climb down. As she stood there, trying in vain to go over any likely hiding place in her mind, her hands felt something rustly in the pocket of a coat she was standing against. It was a Macintosh coat with big pockets. The little girl's heart gave a leap. Suppose the papers had been left in the pocket of the coat the man had on when he took them from Mr. Rowland. That was the only place the children had not searched. The pockets of the coats in the cupboard. With trembling fingers, the girl felt in the pocket where the rustling was. She drew out a sheaf of papers. It was dark in the cupboard, and she could not see if they were the ones she was hunting for or not. But how she hoped they were! She stuffed them up the front of her jersey, for she had no big pocket, and whispered to Dick, "Can I come now?" Crash! The door fell in with a terrific noise, and the two men leapt into the room. They looked round. It was empty. But there was the water spilt on the washstand and on the floor. Someone must be there somewhere. "Look in the cupboard," said Mr. Thomas. George crept out of the clothes cupboard and onto the narrow ledge beyond the place where the false back of the cupboard used to be. It was still hidden sideways in the wall. The girl climbed down the hole a few steps and then shut the oak door, which was now above her head. She had not enough strength to close it completely, but she hoped that now she was safe. The men went to the cupboard and felt about in the clothes for anyone who might possibly be hiding there. Mr. Wilton gave a loud cry. "The papers are gone! They were in this pocket! There's not a sign of them! Quick, we must find the thief and get them back!" The men did not notice that the cupboard seemed to go farther back than usual. They stepped away from it, now that they were sure no one was there, and began to hunt round the room. By now, all the children, except George, were at the bottom of the hole, standing in the secret way, waiting impatiently for George to come down. Poor George was in such a hurry to get down that she had caught her clothing on one of the staples, and had to stand in a very dangerous position, trying to disentangle it. "Come on, George, for goodness sake," said Julian. Timothy jumped up at the wall. He could feel the fear and excitement of the waiting children, and it upset him. He wanted George. Why didn't she come? Why was she up that dark hole? Tim was unhappy about her. He threw back his head and gave such a loud and mournful howl that all the children jumped violently. "Shut up, Tim," said Julian. Tim howled again, and the weird sound echoed round and about in a strange manner. Anne was terrified, and she began to cry. Timothy howled again and again. Once he began to howl, it was difficult to stop him. The men in the bedroom above heard the extraordinary noise and stopped in amazement. "Whatever's that?" said one. "Sounds like a dog howling in the depths of the earth," said the other. "Funny?" said Mr. Wilton. "It seems to be coming from the direction of that cupboard." He went over to it and opened the door. Tim chose that moment to give a specially mournful howl, and Mr. Wilton jumped. He got into the cupboard and felt about at the back. The oak door there gave way beneath his hand, and he felt it open. "There's something weird here," called Mr. Wilton. "Bring my torch off the table." Tim howled again, and the noise made Mr. Wilton shiver. Tim had a peculiarly horrible howl. It came echoing up the hole and burst out into the cupboard. Mr. Thomas got the torch. The men shone it at the back of the cupboard and gave an exclamation. "Look at that! There's a door here! Where does it lead to?" Mrs. Sanders, who had been watching everything in surprise and indignation, angry that her door should have been broken down, came up to the cupboard. "My!" she said. "I knew there was a false back to that cupboard, but I didn't know there was another door behind it, too. That must be the entrance to the secret way that people used in the old days." "Where does it lead to?" rapped out Mr. Wilton. "Goodness knows," said Mrs. Sanders. "I never took much interest in such things."
Come on, we must go down, said Mr. Wilton, shining his torch into the square black hole and seeing the iron foothold set in the stone. This is where the thief went. He can't have got far. We'll go after him. We've got to get those papers back. It was not long before the two men had swung themselves over the narrow ledge and down into the hole, feeling with their feet for the iron staples. Down they went, and down, wondering where they were coming to. There was no sound below them. Clearly, the thief had got away. George had got down at last. Tim almost knocked her over in his joy. She put her hand on his head.
"You old silly," she said. "I believe you've given our secret away. Quick, Jew, we must go, because those men will be after us in a minute. They could easily hear Tim's howling."
Julian took Anne's hand.
"Come along, Anne," he said. "You must run as fast as you can. Hurry now, Dick. Keep with George."
The four of them hurried down the dark, narrow passage. What a long way they had to go home! If only the passage wasn't such a long one! The children's hearts were beating painfully as they made haste, stumbling as they went. Julian shone his light steadily in front of him, and Dick shone his at the back. Half leading, half dragging Anne, Julian hurried along. Behind them, they heard a shout.
"Look, there's a light ahead! That's the thief! Come on, we'll soon get him!"
Chapter 17. Good old Tim.
"Hurry, Anne! Do hurry!" shouted Dick, who was just behind.
Poor Anne was finding it very difficult to get along quickly. Pulled by Julian and pushed by Dick, she almost fell two or three times. Her breath came in loud pants, and she felt as if she would burst.
"Let me have a rest," she panted.
But there was no time for that, with the two men hurrying after them. They came to the piece that was widened out, where the rocky bench was, and Anne looked longingly at it, but the boys hurried her on. Suddenly, the little girl caught her foot on a stone and fell heavily, almost dragging Julian down with her. She tried to get up and began to cry.
"I've hurt my foot! I've twisted it! Oh, Julian, it hurts me to walk!"
"Well, you've just got to come along, darling," said Julian, sorry for his little sister, but knowing that they would all be caught if he was not firm. "Hurry as much as you can."
But now it was impossible for Anne to go fast. She cried with pain as her foot hurt her, and hobbled along so slowly that Dick almost fell over her. Dick cast a look behind him and saw the light of the men's torches coming nearer and nearer. Whatever were they to do?
"I'll stay here with Tim and keep them off," said George suddenly. "Here, take these papers, Dick. I believe they're the ones we want, but I'm not sure till we get a good light to see them. I found them in a pocket of one of the coats in the cupboard."
"Golly,"
said Dick, surprised. He took the sheaf of papers and stuffed them up his jersey, just as George had stuffed them up hers. They were too big to go into his trouser pockets.
"I'll stay with you, George, and let the other two go on ahead."
"No, I want the papers taken to safety in case they are my father's," said George. "Go on, Dick. I'll be all right here with Tim. I shall stay here, just where the passage curves round this rocky bit. I'll make Tim bark like mad."
"Suppose the men have got revolvers," said Dick doubtfully. "They might shoot him."
"I bet they haven't," said George. "Do go, Dick. The men are almost here. There's the light of their torch."
Dick sped after the stumbling Anne. He told Julian what George had suggested.
"Good for George," said Julian. "She really is marvellous, not afraid of anything. She will keep the men off till I get poor old Anne back."
George was crouching behind the rocky bit, her hand on Tim's collar, waiting.
"Now, Tim," she whispered, "bark your loudest, now."
Timothy had been growling up till now, but at George's command, he opened his big mouth and barked.
How he barked! He had a simply enormous voice, and the barks went echoing all down the dark and narrow passage.
The hurrying men, who were near the rocky piece of the passage, stopped.
"If you come round this bend, I'll set my dog on you," cried George.
"It's a child shouting," said one man to another. "Only a child. Come on."
Timothy barked again and pulled at his collar. He was longing to get at the men. The light of their torch shone round the bend. George let Tim go, and the big dog sprang joyfully round the curve to meet his enemies. They suddenly saw him by the light of their torch, and he was a very terrifying sight. To begin with, he was a big dog, and now that he was angry, all the hairs on the back of his neck had risen up, making him look even more enormous. His teeth were bared and glinted in the torchlight. The men did not like the look of him at all.
"If you move one step nearer, I'll tell my dog to fly at you," shouted George. "Wait, Tim, wait. Stand there till I give the word."
The dog stood in the light of the torch, growling deeply. He looked an extremely fierce animal. The men looked at him doubtfully. One man took a step forward, and George heard him. At once she shouted to Tim,
"Go for him, Tim! Go for him!"
Tim leapt at the man's throat. He took him completely by surprise, and the man fell to the ground with a thud, trying to beat off the dog. The other man helped.
"Call off your dog or we'll hurt him," cried the second man.
"It's much more likely he'll hurt you," said George,
coming out from behind the rock and enjoying the fun.
"Tim, come off!"
Tim came away from the man he was worrying, looking up at his mistress as if to say,
"I was having such a good time. Why did you spoil it?"
"Who are you?" said the man on the ground.
"I'm not answering any of your questions," said George. "Go back to Kirin Farmhouse. That's my advice to you. If you dare to come along this passage, I'll set my dog onto you again, and next time he'll do more damage."
The men turned and went back the way they'd come. They neither of them wanted to face Tim again. George waited until she could no longer see the light of their torch. Then she bent down and patted Timothy.
"Brave, good dog," she said. "I love you, darling Tim, and you don't know how proud I am of you. Come along, we'll hurry after the others now. I expect those two men will explore this passage sometime tonight. And won't they get a shock when they find out where it leads to and see who is waiting for them?"
George hurried along the rest of the long passage, with Tim running beside her. She had Dick's torch, and it did not take her long to catch the others up. She panted out to them what had happened, and even poor Anne chuckled in delight when she heard how Tim had flung Mr. Wilton to the ground.
"Here we are,"
said Julian, as the passage came to a stop below the hole in the study floor.
"Hello? What's this?"
A bright light was shining down the hole, and the rug and carpet, so carefully pulled over the hole by Julian, were now pulled back again. The children gazed up in surprise. Uncle Quentin was there, and Aunt Fanny, and when they saw the children's faces looking up at them from the hole, they were so astonished that they very nearly fell down the hole too.
"Julian, Anne, what in the wide world are you doing down there?" cried Uncle Quentin.
He gave them each a hand up, and the four children and Timothy were at last safe in the warm study.
How good it was to feel warm again!
They got as near the fire as they could.
"Children, what is the meaning of this?" asked Aunt Fanny. She looked white and worried. "I came into the study to do some dusting, and when I stood on that bit of the rug, it seemed to give way beneath me. When I pulled it up and turned back the carpet, I saw that hole, and the hole in the panelling too. And then I found that all of you had disappeared and went to fetch your uncle. What has been happening? And where does that hole lead to?"
Dick took the sheaf of papers from under his jersey and gave them to George. She took them and handed them to her father.
"Are these the missing pages?" she asked.
Her father fell on them as if they had been worth more than 100 times their weight in gold. "Yes, yes, they're the pages, all three of them. Thank goodness they're back. They took me 3 years to bring to perfection and contained the heart of my secret formula. George, where did you get them?"
"It's a very long story," said George. "You tell it all, Julian. I feel tired."
Julian began to tell the tale. He left out nothing. He told how George had found Mr. Rowland snooping about the study, how she had felt sure that the tutor had not wanted Timmy in the house because the dog gave warning of his movements at night, how George had seen him talking to the two artists, although he had said he did not know them. As the tale went on, Uncle Quentin and Aunt Fanny looked more and more amazed. They simply could not believe it all. But after all, there were the missing papers, safely back. That was marvellous. Uncle Quentin hugged the papers as if they were a precious baby. He would not put them down for a moment. George told the bit about Timmy keeping the men off the escaping children.
"So you see, although you made poor Tim live out in the cold, away from me, he really saved us all, and your papers too," she said to her father, fixing her brilliant blue eyes on him.
Her father looked most uncomfortable. He felt very guilty for having punished George and Timothy. They had been right about Mr. Rowland, and he had been wrong.
"Poor George," he said, "and poor Timmy. I'm sorry about all that."
George did not bear malice once anyone had owned themselves to be in the wrong. She smiled at her father.
"It's all right," she said, "but don't you think that as I was punished unfairly, Mr. Rowland might be punished well and truly? He deserves it."
"Oh, he shall be. Certainly he shall be," promised her father. "He's up in bed with a cold, as you know. I hope he doesn't hear any of this, or he may try to escape."
"He can't," said George. "We're snowed up. You could ring up the police and arrange for them to come here as soon as ever they can manage it when the snow has cleared. And I rather think those other two men will try to explore the secret way as soon as possible to get the papers back. Could we catch them when they arrive, do you think?"
"Rather," said Uncle Quentin, though Aunt Fanny looked as if she didn't want any more exciting things to happen.
"Now, look here. You seem really frozen, all of you, and you must be hungry, too, because it's almost lunchtime. Go into the dining room and sit by the fire, and Joanna shall bring us all a hot lunch. Then we'll talk about what to do."
Nobody said a word to Mr. Rowland, of course. He lay in bed, coughing now and then. George had slipped up and locked his door. She wasn't going to have him wandering out and overhearing anything. They all enjoyed their hot lunch and became warm and cosy. It was nice to sit there together, talking over their adventure and planning what to do.
"I will telephone to the police, of course," said Uncle Quentin, "and tonight we will put Timmy into the study to give the two artists a good welcome if they arrive."
Mr. Rowland was most annoyed to find his door locked that afternoon when he took it into his head to dress and go downstairs. He banged on it indignantly. George grinned and went upstairs. She had told the other children how she had locked the door.
"What's the matter, Mr. Rowland?" she asked in a polite voice.
"Oh, it's you, George, is it?" said the tutor. "See what's the matter with my door, will you? I can't open it."
George had pocketed the key when she had locked the door, so she answered Mr. Rowland in a cheerful voice.
"Oh, Mr. Rowland, there's no key in your door, so I can't unlock it. I'll see if I can find it."
Mr. Rowland was angry and puzzled. He couldn't understand why his door was locked and the key gone. He did not guess that everyone knew about him now. Uncle Quentin laughed when George went down and told him about the locked door.
"He may as well be kept a prisoner," he said. "He can't escape now."
That night,
everyone went to bed early, and Timmy was left in the study guarding the hole. Mr. Rowland had become more and more angry and puzzled when his door was not unlocked. He had shouted for Uncle Quentin, but only George had come. He could not understand it. George, of course, was enjoying herself. She made Timothy bark outside Mr. Rowland's door, and this puzzled him too, for he knew that George was not supposed to see Timmy for 3 days. Wild thoughts raced through his head. Had that fierce, impossible child locked up her father and mother and Joanna, as well as himself? He could not imagine what had happened. In the middle of the night, Timmy awoke everyone by barking madly. Uncle Quentin and the children hurried downstairs, followed by Aunt Fanny and the amazed Joanna. A fine sight met their eyes. Mr. Wilton and Mr. Thomas were in the study, crouching behind the sofa, terrified of Timothy, who was barking for all he was worth. Timmy was standing by the hole in the stone floor, so that the two men could not escape down there. Artful Timmy! He had waited in silence until the men had crept up the hole into the study and were exploring it, wondering where they were. And then the dog had leapt to the hole to guard it, preventing the men from escaping.
"Good evening, Mr. Wilton. Good evening, Mr. Thomas," said George in a polite voice. "Have you come to see our tutor, Mr. Rowland?"
"So, this is where he lives," said Mr. Wilton. "Was it you in the passage today?"
"Yes, and my cousins," said George. "Have you come to look for the papers you stole from my father?"
The two men were silent. They knew they were caught. Mr. Wilton spoke after a moment.
"Where's Mr. Rowland?"
"Shall we take these men to Mr. Rowland, Uncle?" asked Julian, winking at George. "Although it's in the middle of the night, I'm sure he would love to see them."
"Yes," said his uncle, jumping at once to what the boy meant to do. "Take them up. Timmy, you go too."
The men followed Julian upstairs, Timmy close to their heels. George followed too, grinning. She handed Julian the key. He unlocked the door, and the men went in, just as Julian switched on the light. Mr. Rowland was wide awake, and gave an exclamation of complete amazement when he saw his friends. Before they had time to say a word, Julian locked the door again and threw the key to George.
"A nice little bag of prisoners," he said. "We will leave old Tim outside the door to guard them. It's impossible to get out of that window, and anyway, we're snowed up if they could escape that way."
Everyone went to bed again. But the children found it difficult to sleep after such an exciting time. Anne and George whispered together, and so did Julian and Dick. There was such a lot to talk about. Next day, there was a surprise for everyone. The police did arrive after all. The snow did not stop them, for somewhere or other they had got skis and had come skimming along valiantly to see the prisoners. It was a great excitement for everyone.
"We won't take the men away, sir, till the snow has gone," said the inspector. "We'll just put the handcuffs on them so that they don't try any funny tricks. You keep the door locked too, and that dog outside. They'll be safe there for a day or two. We've taken them enough food till we come back again. If they go a bit short, it will serve them right."
The snow melted 2 days later, and the police took away Mr. Rowland and the others. The children watched.
"No more lessons these holes," said Anne gleefully.
"No more shutting Timothy out of the house," said George.
"You were right, and we were wrong, George," said Julian. "You were fierce, weren't you? But it's a jolly good thing you were."
"She is fierce, isn't she?" said Dick, giving the girl a sudden hug. "But I rather like her when she's fierce, don't you, Julian?" "Oh, George, we do have marvellous adventures with you. I wonder if we'll have any more."
"They will. There isn't a doubt of that."
That was Five Go Adventuring Again by Enid Blyton, read by Jan Francis.